peace and blessings. Thank you so much for joining me. Stuart Watkins here, your host. My guest today is an incredible friend. He's an inspiration and mentor to so many people, John Wyeth. I absolutely loved this conversation with John. We went into all kinds of different topics for 90 minutes. It felt like we could have just kept talking for hours, but we wrapped it up at about 90 minutes. And we kept returning back to the art of listening and how that can be applied to anything and everything. It feels really important in our current times where there are countless distractions available. This discipline, this devotion to pay attention, to listen during conversation and during time with ourselves, during any moment, this devotional yogic practice of being with what is and the art of listening. I really enjoyed John's wisdom on that topic, and he is writing a book about it, which I'm super excited to check out. He's got a newly released website, which I'm really excited about as well. I'll leave a link below to that. And I love what he gets up to. I mean, we do talk about it all in the podcast, but he makes drums and he takes people through workshops to make their own drum, which I've done, which was a really special day of making my own hoop drum, which I use regularly. It's right here, right beside me. It's a powerful instrument, and a lot of people are doing it now, and it's being transformational for people to make this very healing instrument themselves. There's really something to that in today's day and age where it's so easy just to hop online and order pretty much anything from wherever in the world, which is great, but it can also maybe dull our appreciation for these powerful instruments. He makes his own clothes, which I'm wearing one of his tank tops that he gifted me today that's been dyed in mulberry, which it just smells and feels great. He makes smudge sticks. I've got one of them right beside me as well. I'm kind of filled with the products of John Wyeth. And yeah, he brings incredible organic products to the world. A lot of it is around the corner in Fremantle at Halka B, but you can also hop onto his website and check it out. I love what he's doing. He is a very unique man. His land is exquisite. I do love when I can to get up there and sit in his teepee and go deep. He spoke a bit about his yoga practices of doing Agnihotra very regularly at sunrise and often at sunset as well. And with that being said, he's going to be doing that at Flow, which he's done. He did it the first year at Flow. He did it the last Flow. It's a powerful part of Flow that we deeply appreciate. He's got such a grounding and wise energy. And he's been doing this Agnihotra. I mean, he's done it countless times. There's a real potency to it that people really appreciate. So he's going to be doing the Agnihotra each sunset at Flow, which will be followed by cacao ceremony into ecstatic dance. It's going to be a beautiful unfoldment from the stillness of the Agnihotra, the reverence, the meditation, the mantra, into dynamic, heart-opening ecstasy. Can't wait. And there's only a couple weeks to go. There's been a bit of a rumor going around that tickets have sold out. They haven't. There are some tickets left, not a lot, especially car passes. There's not a lot of car passes left, but there are tickets left. There are day tickets available now for people that either don't want to camp or they just want to come for the day. Day tickets are available, and tickets for teenagers are available, and there are free tickets available for kids under 12 to come with each ticket holder. Super excited to have all these beautiful people involved, such as John Wife and his partner Mandy and her sister Kate. Yeah, it's a powerful group of people, a beautiful group of people. The community is just incredible. I love being back in Western Australia and connecting with the community. There's such a embracing, loving, generous energy I'm feeling big time this summer, like more than ever. So hope you're joining us that weekend of January 10th until the 12th. 3 days, 2 nights of yoga, meditation, inspirational discussions, dance, swimming in that beautiful spring-fed water hole, camping, community, and so much more. I'm really excited about it, and it's going to be here before we know it. So stay cool over the Christmas, New Year, stay grounded. It can be a bit crazy out there. People running around into the kind of trance of the festive season and consumerism. It's so easy to get sucked up in that, you know? And I did feel that last weekend around Fremantle. It's beautiful, the festive season, and people are letting their hair down and partying. It's beautiful. I love it. But often, it can, if one isn't grounded, people can get a little bit crazy, and the kind of come down of that is really felt. So a big part of flow is about unplugging, getting our feet on the earth, recalibrating, connecting with that festive, devotional, blissful, connecting and creative feeling we all yearn for, but in such a healthy and balanced way. I can't speak more about it. I could, but I won't. I'll hand it over to the podcast, which I so deeply enjoyed. Here is my discussion with the amazing John Wife. Here we are, John. Great to be with you. Thank you for coming all the way over. How have you been?
Pleasure, Stuart. It's great to be here. The big drive all the way down from Gidgee-Ganna in the hot spell. I've been well, been good.
Good. Well, it's an honor. I am wearing one of John's fresh tie-dye Mulberry-dyed tank tops, one of your many crafts. It's awesome. It feels so comfortable.
And it was just a play. It was we had heaps of mulberries on the tree this year. And I remember as a kid with my mum, we used to tie-dye, singlets, and I just thought, I'll have a bit of a play. So I went and grabbed some white singlets and just played them, just tie-dyed them up, and I thought I'd do one for you. So here we are.
Your generosity is like no other. You come bearing gifts all the time, your smudge sticks and your what do you call the pop, almost like a blend, a bush blend.
The bush blend, yeah. I think one of the beautiful things in life is just a gift to people, make a cake or make up something, not necessarily have to buy, but just to actually, the gift of giving, just a gift of the, and, the old saying, as you give, you receive. So the joy of just gifting, to me, it's something I like to do as much as I can, just to gift, in various ways, little bits here and there.
And it's so inspiring. You're like this enigma of an entrepreneur without really trying to be. That might be my own perception, but I mean, I don't think you really engage on social media yet, do you? I think Mandy's been giving you little nudges here and there, but
she's working at it. Hi, Mandy. And she's actually just last night set up a web page for me. So I'm doing a web page for you so you can announce it on the interview.
So when will that be ready?
It's ready now.
Cool.
But obviously we're still playing around with it. So Mandy spent a bit of time with that. So I don't know about the entrepreneur bit, but, I decided many years ago in my mid-30s that I didn't want to do the 9-to-5 job thing. I'd tried that and it didn't resonate with me and I wasn't driven by money. So I actually tuned in and thought, well, what am I here to do? What is my thing? What am I passionate about? And I'm passionate about, my parents had the farm, and I thought, well, I've got the land. I love making things with my hands. So I planted sage way back 25 years ago. And then things just evolved by just following spirit and following my instinct and, yeah, from making things. And I probably could do a lot better as far as the selling and the entrepreneur bit, but it's not my driving thing. I don't, you know, I'm there. I just enjoy making and giving and holding space for people to come and connect to the earth, you know.
Well, I think that's what's so beautiful. Like there seems to be that flow of abundance and giving and showing, offering your craft, like with the, I've got one of your drums here, which is exquisite. And even just that, like what an experience for people to get on this beautiful land and make something themselves, which is so becoming more and more uncommon as all these conveniences become more and more convenient, commodified. And that's where I see you as this kind of enigma entrepreneur, but you're not trying to be. And that's the beautiful thing. It's just you offering your gift, and it's coming from your dharma, your natural flow. And that's what's so beautiful.
Yeah, you know, it's evolved, and it's evolved, as I said, you know, back when I was 35, basically, I read Secret Life of Plants and tuned in around, you know, to the plants have consciousness, and then I read Secrets of the Soils, where I saw Agnihotra. And then as it was a couple of months later, I went to Conscious Living Expo, and a couple from the Eastern States walked over up on stage with an Agnihotra kit, and I went, wow, that's what I just read about that. So I went and bought one, and I've been doing Agnihotra for 25 years.
Every day, huh?
Well, yeah, pretty much every day. I've missed a few, but it's a daily practice. And to me, as you know, that daily practice is so important. You know, you're actually sending out a ripple of energy out to the universe, out to spirit, saying, here, I'm not just thinking about this. I'm not just sort of, you know, pretending. I'm actually doing this. This is what I want to do. So the more you send out that ripple, that energy of walking that path, then the more the universe will align and actually send you the next part of your journey. And so Agnihotra was a base, and then from there on I actually got gifted a drum for, I think it was around my 40th birthday, and I made a drum with this guy down in the suburbs down in Perth, and I was really coming from the land and sitting in his backyard in the suburbs was an interesting, but I had this feeling of having done this before. This felt lifetimes of having this weaving and this drum. You know, I rang this guy who was actually a hairdresser, and he said, no, it's not my thing. I was just doing, he'd learnt from an American Indian who'd come over, and so he said, I'm not doing it anymore, but he said, I've got a hoop and a skin, because I wanted to make one for the partner I was with at the time. And he said, I can send you up a skin and a hoop, and he said, look, you look like you had a pretty good handle on what you're doing. I said, yeah, you know. So he sent up a skin and a hoop, and I made up this drum. And then another friend actually said, well, I've got, you know, that had already had a drum, and she was doing healing weekends and using the drum as a part of the technique. And she said, well, I've got 6 people that want drums, and this other guy's not doing them. Do you want to make drums? So it was basically just offered to me in the fact that, so it took a lot of who am I? Why, you know, at that time I just turned vegetarian a few years before, and I'm using an animal that had been killed. And so do I want to do that? And so I really had to tune in and connected in with the spirit of the deer. And basically what I got, and this is my version, is that the spirit of the deer said, well, you know, we're happy to be used in this way. We're not actually being killed for the skin. They're actually being farmed venison. So skin was a byproduct. And they said, we are more than happy for you to use the skin in this way. We just would ask you to honor us and give thanks and gratitude for, you know, the gift, what you have. So that's what we do in the drum course. And so it all started from there. It was sort of like an offering or an opportunity from spirit that presented itself. And So I stepped through that doorway and have been doing that for nearly 20 years. And it's really powerful to see people come and make their own drum. As you say, it's not something you just go and buy. It's actually you get a hoop and a skin and, you, as I say to people at the start, you are making a medicine drum, but it's not a medicine drum, it's your medicine drum. So what is your medicine? What are you here to gift? First, to gift to yourself. And then once you've gifted to yourself and you start walking that, then you gift to other people, you gift, to, gift to community. So what is your medicine? You know, what are you here? What's your earth walk? What are you here to do? To, you know, are you a communicator? Are you a listener? Are you a carer? Or are you, you know, what's your inspiration? What's your passion? Mm-hmm. So, and I've found that when people come and make their drums, they, I see them laugh and I go, oh, wow, I've just so connected to this drum and it's just opening me up and it's helping me to walk deeper on my path and, you know, because it's connected to the heart. It's, you know, it just gets people out of that headspace. And when you play your own drum, which is you've created, it's a part of you. So, it, you know, it connects you into the heart and connects you into the heart of Pachamama. So
it's a powerful day. It was one of the most memorable days I've had on your land.
I remember that day.
Dear friends. And
yeah.
Yeah, it was a glorious day, lots of laughter and creativity and insight, and it was just beautiful, a very memorable day, and my connection to this drum just keeps deepening. It's, it feels kind of ageless in a way, like it's building up.
The more you use of anything, like, you know, your drum or your didge or whatever it is, you're deepening your medicine. Your medicine is getting stronger and stronger. And so, you know, my drum, the first drum that I drum everybody with when they come, it's, you know, it's for one of them that I made with this other guy, which is 1996. I made it, so it's 25 years old. And I don't let a lot of people actually handle it or touch it because it's very tuned to my energy. So I'm very particular in who I actually, you know, let play it. I've got a smaller drum which I hand out and let other people play, but that the big drum is very much my medicine, and it's been through lots of drum journeys and shamanic journeys and, you know, ceremonies that I take, and sometimes I don't play it, but it's usually there. So it holds a lot of my medicine. And as, you know, the more we use these tools, the more they're connected to our frequency, our vibration, and they resonate with that and they enhance what it is that we, you know, are doing. So,
So listeners, if you're wanting to make your very own hoop drum, I'll leave a link below to your new website and get in touch, because it really is an incredible experience up in Gidjiganup. Really a great, priceless experience.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I could be doing more of the drums, but I actually stopped for 6 months last year because the guy that I was getting the skins from couldn't supply them anymore. He was actually the guy he was getting from was selling direct to Chinese, and they were getting more money for them. So deer skins aren't all that easy to get from. I found one more source, which is about the only one in Australia, and but they've got quite a waiting list. So deer skins are a bit of a problem as far as getting them, and I've tried kangaroo and others, but deer is traditionally what the American Indians use, and it's very durable. Like kangaroo is quite thin and it splits very easy. So, the skins are, in saying that, it is a great day, and I've got about half a dozen people now who are waiting to make drums for next year or, you know. So
join the wait list. Do you get much, you spoke of your contemplation when you turned vegetarian, speaking with the deer, energy. Have you had any criticism or much criticism from vegetarians, from vegans about that?
No, I've had a few people ask me, and a few people say, will you use, you know, like a synthetic skin? And I say, no, I won't. I'll this is what I'm offering. And I explain my process and say, you know, this is traditionally what is used. And so I said, it's really up to you to find whether that fits for you or if it doesn't. If it doesn't, that's fine. I completely understand, because I had to go through my own process as well. And my vegetarian, you know, I grew up on the farm, and I used to kill sheep when I was a young boy. I watched my dad kill sheep, and so we lived off the land, and we probably killed a sheep every couple of weeks. So I then, as I got older into a teenager, I used to kill sheep and eat the meat. And so And then from that, I moved from, you know, from meat to chicken and slowly to fish and slowly weaned off, and occasionally I might have a little bit of fish now. So I'm not a strict vegetarian. I've sort of eat eggs, and I, you know, I used to have my own beehive. So my take on it is, this is for me, is that is to live off the land. You know, traditionally the indigenous cultures would live off the land, and so if there was kangaroo, or if you're in America there's buffalo or whatever, they would eat whatever, you know, was available. They would use the skin, they would use the bones, they would use a variety of different, you know, foods that were there, and that would balance their diet. Wherein, you know, you look at the foods these days, there's so much processed and refined foods, and a lot of people are eating foods but they're not actually being nourished, because there's no natural, there's no minerals in the food or anything. The body's going, well, we've just eaten something, but there's nothing there. I'm still hungry at a cellular level because the cells aren't getting nourished. So it's really finding your own way and making sure that you eat sort of a variety and a balance that suits you, and not just doing it because it's a fad or somebody else is doing it, but actually, does this resonate and tune into your own energy, your own frequency? And I've noticed, you know, like occasionally, man, you know, I'll grab some chips if we're coming home from somewhere, and, you know, the old hot chips and things like that, which we don't eat a lot. But the next day I can just feel, if I'm doing yoga or something like that, I actually feel a little bit stiffer in my body and a little bit sort of just a little not as free in my body, I suppose, maybe getting older. But I
do the same thing.
Yeah.
And I find it actually therapeutic just to have a day every now and then of eating, quote unquote, normal. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, normal. But stuff like that, fish and chips and whatever. And I find it therapeutic in that it then takes my appreciation for living off the land and living more healthily. It takes it to another level. And yeah, it's not always that common, but every now and then I find it quite therapeutic, kind of like a reboot or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think it's good just to, you know, because we can get so focused on things or so focused on, you know, and I ran a health retreat for a couple of years and got right into juicing. I used to juice and I used to fast every Monday was my fast day, and you know, went through all that, and now I'm a bit more relaxed. You know, I'll juice every now and again.
We can get a bit precious, a bit neurotic.
Yeah. You know, and it's good just to go, you know what, I really feel like some chips, and I'm just going to, you know, because when we deny ourselves, then we actually set up something else in the body that's created, you know, like a blockage or an angst or something. It actually reminds me of Mario Martinez, who's a neuropsychologist, and he's done work with the Dalai Lama. And apparently with a lot of the Buddhist monks, though, as he was saying, that they have high levels of diabetes. And with Mario Martinez was saying that they got it back to basically because they have to subdue their emotions and they're not allowed to hug or not allowed to touch, then a lot of things, some emotions or energies are actually being denied, and therefore it's coming out on a physical dis-ease.
Interesting. In a way.
So yeah, it's really interesting on some of his stuff where you actually look at, you know, sometimes we can get so rigid and so focused, not, you know, rigid, but we can get so intense on what we're doing. I was a bit like that when I started Agni Hotra. Oh my God, I've got to get it and I've got to get this. And I would, you know, I've got to do it. And I actually would, rather than relaxing and enjoying it, I'd finish the fire going, oh my God. And so I actually had to just ease off a little bit and go, okay, hopefully I'll get the, you know, sit down and do the fire. And if I don't, because, you know, sunset is a busy time of the day when it's usually when you've got kids and it's dinner time and all that stuff. So it's finding a balance in everything that we do, you know, and honoring ourselves at the same time, you know. It's especially when you've got kids and you've got a family where, like Mandy and I at the moment, this is the first time we've discussed, this is the first time for a long time that we are actually in a relationship. We haven't got any kids. So it's just the two of us. And it's like, wow, it's just, you know, it's just the two of us. If we want to sleep in or if we want to just do that, then it's just, yeah. And as we've walked that path, you know, as doing all those different, you know, that journey of the kids and the whatever, you know, I didn't have my kids all the time. But Yeah, it's nice to actually feel that liberation and actually just to have that space of being able to just to connect in deeper with each other as far as just spending that time.
How have your travels been? How have your trips to India been together and your retreats and all of that?
Yeah, it's been a great learning curve. You know, the first trip in March was my first trip to India and first one to Rishikesh. So we took 12 people, but as Mandy said, she took 13, which I was the 13th because, you know, I hadn't been there before. So everything that, you know, we went to the Beatles ashram and we went, you know, up to the Himalayas and watched the sunset. So everything we did, it was first time for me. So yeah. I was sort of trying to support Mandy and help her, but then also just working out what was going on as well at the same time. So it got pretty intense for Mandy and I as far as holding space for 12 people in that. And we had a few moments in the trip where I think I was sleeping in the corridor, one of them, and about to catch the plane home. That was about the second last night. And I just said, no, actually, you know, because my little child was going, oh, you know, what about me? And I'm, you know, and I was just going, well, actually, you're here to hold space for the people. And you're actually here to hold space for Mandy. So just, you know, grow up and put that aside, whatever it is, and acknowledge it. But then, you know, just be with it, and we'll talk about it later, which we did. So we actually had a good chat about and changed a few things. And it's a lot of it's to do with communication and just tuning in with each other and because Mandy does certain things, she's been doing her journeys and her yoga and holding groups a certain way for so many years, and I've been holding space for 20-odd years, full moon drummings and drum courses, and I do it a certain way. So it was just it was a weave, and we just had to find that weave, which sometimes is, you know, like sometimes butting heads, and other times just going, okay, that's where you're coming from. I thought we were doing it this way, but we're actually this better to do it this way. And so it was just to have some allowance in the relationship, just allowing each other to soften and to then find the weave and that aspect of really honouring the divine feminine and the divine masculine. Because when you're in holding space and you're really tuning with each other, it's such a beautiful space, as you would know with Joe, you know, if whenever you're doing anything together, is that holding space with that divine feminine, divine masculine is, you know, it's sets such a beautiful energy and such a high frequency that, you know, you're basically inviting spirit to come and join, you know, in this beautiful space. So yeah, we've learned a lot.
So please share of that kind of experience. You're wanting to fly home. What did that feel like? You felt what? Can you get a bit more vivid of that? Like for people in similar situations to relate, you know, that inner child wasn't happy, you mentioned. And then what was the turning point that had you step up and see the bigger picture?
Yeah, it was, you know, there was, you know, on that first trip there was, and Mandy and I were still getting to know each other, so I hope you don't mind me sharing this, Mandy.
She was pretty vivid as well about you and your relationship. It was great. It's helpful for people. It's good.
Yeah, and it's it's all part of the journey. I mean, you know, the trip to Rishikesh is life-changing. We do have, Mandy said to mention this, we do have another one in next March if people are interested.
Great, yeah. But it's the link, I'll put it down below.
Yeah. It's life-changing in so many different ways, you know, to sit by the Ganga and doing it, and we teach people Agnihotra, to sit by the Ganga and that mighty river that flows through, and you can just feel this life force energy, the goddess, and you can just feel transformation and energy shifting. So it brings up stuff for you to heal. And, you know, the sadhus and the gurus and they're walking the streets, and just the energy of the place, you know, is so powerful. So stuff is coming up for you to heal, and relationships often childhood stuff that still, you know, is what about me, you know? And so in this process with Mandy and I was that we were basically, there was a few little situations that had come up as far as just, you know, dealing with the group situation and then dealing with our own, you know, personal aspects, because you're holding space all day and then you're trying to relate to each other and still work out what's happening with the group. And then we had, you know, dynamics with some of the people in the rooms, and so it was a weave. And that was, as I say, it was the first time that Mandy and I had actually, we'd sat in circles for an hour or two and held space. This is 8 days. Mm-hmm. you know, 12 hours a day, then, you know, sleeping and then getting up and going again. So I did a lot of deep breathing. You know, I was there ultimately holding space for Mandy with and the group, you know, for what she was, as I say, she'd been there four times before. I hadn't. So I was sort of trying to hold space, but really not doing a very good job because I hadn't been there. I didn't know what was going to happen really the next day or where we were going or so. And I think from her point that she was wanting more support, which I really couldn't offer her, you know, in a certain way. So she was leaning on me a bit and I was sort of trying to be there present, but not really being able to. And so felt like I was caught wanting a little bit, I suppose, and trying to step up. And then we got to a point where, I don't know, something happened. And I said, right, that's it. I've had enough. It's like I had overload. Mm-hmm. And this was at 10 o'clock at night. And I said, see you later. I'm catching the next plane basically tomorrow, you know. And then I just realized she had my passport somewhere. So we're staying in this hotel in Rishikesh, you know, and I just went, I'm not sleeping in this room. I've had enough. So I went and a couple of, you know, levels down, there was a big couch bed. So it's about 10 o'clock at night. So I went and snuggled up there and I'm staying here, you know, I'm sleeping here. And then I was there for about half an hour and a security guard came along and he just looked at me and said, what are you doing? I said, well, you know, when you have a partner or a wife? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, when you don't get on and, you know, and he said, yeah, yeah. And I said, well, we've had a bit of a, you know, situation. I'm not going back to the room. He said, well, you can't sleep there. And I said, well, I'll go and sleep in the garden, you know, because it's 28 degrees or 30 degrees over in, you know, in India. I said, I'll just go and sleep in the garden. He went, no, no, you can't do that. And I said, well, I'm not going to, I'll, you know. He said, I'll go and get the head security guard. So he came over and he looked at me and I explained the situation and he just said, okay, well, I think he was more concerned about the other guests coming along, seeing this vagabond, you know, guy huddled up in the corner, you know, homeless. And so he looked at me and he said, right, you can stay there, but just, you know, look after yourself and, you know, get yourself sorted tomorrow, stay there tonight. Anyway, it was about 1 o'clock and I was sort of just dozing off and Mandy appeared. I said, come on, John. Come back to bed. Let's, you know, I'm like, we don't have to talk. We don't have to do anything. Just come. She'd been looking for me for about an hour and found me. I said, no, not. I'm staying here, you know, defiant. And she just sat next to me for about 10 or 15 minutes, said, come on, you know, we can do this. Let's just, you know, let's just connect in. And I just allowed myself to soften, you know, that little, as you know, even before that, I was thinking, going through my process and I was going, okay, I'm catching the next plane. I don't know. I'll get my passport and I'm out of here. I've just had enough, you know. And then I went, you know what? You're running away. You actually got to stand up because you owe it to the group of people. They've paid money to come on this trip. You owe it to the group of people to actually see this through and to honour that and to be there. Whatever is going on with you, you could put that aside because this you have, you know, a responsibility here to do that. And then I went, well, actually the next step was I actually have a responsibility to Mandy to we're doing this together. We actually, you know, I need to actually step up and support her and be there, whatever the differences are, whatever's going on. So it was saying to the little child, yeah, I see you, I hear you. And yes, you know, there is some stuff there and there is some, you know, for Mandy's child and my child to come together and to explore and to sit and to, you know. And so I acknowledged that and in that acknowledgement was like, yes. And once you acknowledge something, then that's 50% of the healing. If you actually see a situation in life and you acknowledge it and recognize it, then that's, to me, sorry, is a greater part of that healing process. And then, okay, from that acknowledgement, what am I going to do from that acknowledgement? Do I want to stay in that old cycle, that old circle, or do I actually want to create a new story? Do I want to change? And what do I want to do from this and what do we want to change? So, yeah, I came back to the room and we spent the night together. We were still like, I think we'd separated, we'd broken up and we had one more day left, I think, the finishing closing ceremony. And that afternoon, I think Mandy and I took a trip up to the Himalayas to supposedly a cave where Jesus had spent time in. And in that trip, being in the back of the car and 2-hour trip up to Himalayas and then crawling in the cave, and by the 2 hours back, we were just back together in love again. By the time we'd, you know, we'd sort of healed it and we'd reconnected and just, you know, and saw that spark. And that spark was there. It was always there. It just got covered over with our stuff.
Thank you for sharing. It's really powerful. And I mean, as men, I kind of think of the patterns that we've had for so long of being the man. Being the man, and it's my way or the highway, and the patterns of denial, the patterns of aggression, the patterns of defensiveness. And I think it's very easy to default into that defensiveness. I feel that in myself, you know, when things are getting hot, when things are getting confronting, I see old patterns of denial, defensiveness, fear of confrontation. And they're such precious moments to step into that fire of purification. It's so fucking uncomfortable, really uncomfortable. Like, it feels like a death sometimes.
Yeah,
I've definitely had moments where I've, and it's so crazy. Like when I've had moments of witnessing it, it's so crazy. It's like getting sucked into a nightmare, really, and sucked into a dream. But then it's relatively real. Like, our nervous system is sending really strong signals through the body, and we're real. It's real. And yeah, you just want to get on a plane and get away from that discomfort, you know. But that moment of, you turn back into the fire is powerful. And we've got so many moments to be able to do that. Little moments of avoidance, you know, little moments of fear to turn into that fear and expand, which it sounds like is what you and Mandy both did. Do you feel?
Yeah, it's been a big journey in for both of us. In basically, where, you know, when you mirror, when you're in a conscious relationship, and when things come up, it's like you can, you know, point the finger, or you can go, you know, and then when you actually have a moment to stop. And hopefully, and both Mandy and I are getting pretty good with it. We've had practice, you know, because in a relationship where you're conscious, it's like, well, okay, what's come up here? You know, we can blame, point the finger, or we can actually go, well, okay, something's come up for healing. What is it? What is it? Ah, thank you. I see you. Ah, thank you. What a gift. And then to actually to hold space for each other. And to actually listen, I think, you know, as you're saying, for men, there's that old ancestral paradigm of anger and domination. As the men, we can thump our fists and we can get angry and we can, you know, be physical. And, you know, it's a big thing for women. What they've come through is to actually feel safe, to actually be heard. And for a man to actually listen and to hold space. And sometimes with Mandy, I go, yeah, I hear you, and I hear you. It's not for me to fix. I'm just hearing you. I'm listening to what you're saying, if there's something for her, because sometimes it's not ours. It's actually that person needs to get that out or to actually express that. And sometimes it's me or sometimes it's Mandy, but it's actually for each other to be able to hold space for each other and see what is there. What is there? Oh, okay, this is a trust issue, or this is feeling safe, or it's not being heard, or whatever it is, you know. And that can go back from childhood, or, you know, from earlier relationships, or whatever. So it's an opportunity to heal. It's an opportunity rather than to, because I think a lot of time as humans, we want to be right, or we, you know, the first reaction, because, you know, a lot of the times is a reaction. If we can just take a breath and come from the heart and act rather than, you look at the word react. So a lot of the times we're just reacting something that we've done before and before again, because it's a defense mechanism. I'm being attacked. So I'm there going, you know, flight and fight, I'm going into survival. So the best form of defense is attack. So that's what we do a lot of the time, you know. Rather than just go, okay, the art of listening, which is one of my biggest things, especially as a man, I hear something and then I'll create my own story and go, okay, yeah, I heard that, but this, what about this or what about that? Actually just to let that go and to actually just to be able to hear without going into our own things, just to be present and to hear has been a big journey for me.
It's a huge journey for
everybody.
Everyone.
Yeah.
I think that's a common, common issue in communication with anyone, being preoccupied with what we're going to say next, that that silence that is so uncomfortable for most people. What I love to do in a lot of longer format classes is to have 20 minutes to half an hour of soul gazing, eye gazing, often paired up with a complete stranger, of like just looking and being, which we're kind of doing here, but we're talking. That's one thing I love about the podcast, is just gazing into this other person's eyes for an hour straight or so and talking about something I love. It's a meditation for me. And it's often so profound for people, the sharings that come up of having that amount of time, 20 minutes plus of just listening, both listening and exercising that, holding space without needing to impose or project, just being. It's a great exercise for people. The art of listening.
Yeah. And I was about to jump in there when you were like, just listen.
Yeah.
Because what came to mind when you were saying was that intimacy. It's actually being intimate with another man or with another being. And sometimes we don't know that person, but it's actually just dropping the ability just to drop and just to be in the heart and just to be intimate and feeling safe and actually just to be seen, to be heard, to be seen. You know, as humans, we all want to be loved. We want to give love and we want to be loved. And so those opportunities don't come around, you know, they do, but they also are, we're so busy. We're, you know, got to pick the kids up or we've got to get dinner or we've got to do this and do that, to actually just to sit and to, you know, tantra or, you know, whatever it is. In tantra, is not just about the physical aspect. Mm-hmm. Same with yoga. It's not about the physical. It encompasses so much more. It's about then, you know, an energetic way of being. And, you know, I'm writing a book, which I started a couple of years ago.
Tell us.
And it's about the things we have been talking about. It's, you know, about what I talked about before. One of the main things in biggest part of the healing is to acknowledge what it actually is going on, what's happening. And from that acknowledgement part, then being in appreciation and then looking and seeing what story do I, acknowledging that to that point, and then what do I want to create from that? Do I want to stay in that old circle? And so it's really about being present. You know, these are ships that when and communication and navigation is the big part of this journey. And we're in relationships all the time.
Love that.
With ourselves, with this earth, with nature, with everything around us, with our partner. We're always relating. And a lot of the times it's, you know, with ourselves. We're not actually spending time with ourselves, sitting, meditating, just being present, just, oh, I've got to watch television or I've got to do this or I've got to do that. And a lot of times sex is just relating to us, you know, spending time, quality time with just ourselves. And then it's how we relate to nature. You know, I am fortunate to be on the farm and I have a teepee. And so the joy of doing Agnihotra every morning is that I got up at 4:45 this morning, did my Agnihotra at 5, then I did about an hour of yoga, which is my pretty sort of basic practice, which has improved a lot since being with Mandy Jane. So I do about an hour and a half most mornings, and that's just my time I spend nourishing with myself. I step out of the teepee and it's like, okay, I'm ready for the day. And so that nourishes me, and no one else is going to do it for me. You know, no one else can give to me like I can give to me. And so a lot of times as humans, this ship, this vessel that we are in, we are not actually, you know, spending time or relating fully. We're sort of just doing the bare minimum. And to me, it's, you know, when I sit and do Agnihotra, I tune into the birds. You know, the birds first thing in the morning, I play a bit of flute and I tune into the birds and the chitty chitties, the willy wagtails, and the cows that are walking past. And, you know, this morning I went and collected cow manure for the Agnihotra. I've got people that come, and so I sell cow manure as one of my life's purposes. And so just being out in the paddock collecting the cow manure. It seems very simple and basic, but it's a meditation. You know, the cows are there and they're very graceful and peaceful, and I sort of talk to them. And so in that process is, yeah, I'm walking barefoot on the earth. I'm connecting to the trees and the wind, and, you know, and so to me that is really important for me, because that was what nourishes me. That's what, you know, that fills me up. Mm. And then I can give to others, and I go, okay, I get inspired, or I get messages that drop in, and then, yeah, I'll do a T-shirt for Stu, or I'll make a smudge stick, or I'll...
Do you have a smartphone yet?
No.
Ah, I love that. That's another part of the enigma of John Wyeth. I love...
Is there an enigma, is there?
Yeah.
I've got a phone, a mobile phone, but not a smartphone.
Okay, well...
Is that the same different. Or different?
No, it's different. Like an iPhone or a mobile phone is different. I'll have a look.
I think what you call is an Android I've got or something.
Okay, I'll have a look.
But I got that.
I know you're not on social media, that's for sure.
I went to Italy a couple of years ago and I thought, you know what, I probably should get a mobile phone. So that was a couple of years I got that. No, I'm...
I appreciate that. It's an I cut you off as well. But it is an inspiration because... it's being completely normalized to be locked into the phone, which is another thing I love about this. We're not on raw nature, but there is that intimacy of uninterrupted conversation, connection without that phone. And there's a common practice a lot of people doing now when out having dinner or having a tea like this. And okay, let's all put our phones away or in the middle of the table, turn them off, put them in the middle of the table, and let's actually pay attention.
Yeah.
Because it's crazy what's being normalized now. Like, we were just in LA, and I find the things that are about to spread throughout the world are kind of already happening there. You know, it's just such an epicenter of humanity. And the normal, quote unquote, thing at a restaurant or a cafe is complete hunchback, jaw slammed forward, everyone on their phone. Everyone, even
not
though
relating
like, we're
to
together.
Each other, but just,
on that. And Joe and I have been just gobsmacked at it, just observing what has been normalized. But as a remedy to that, a lot of people are going, all right, let's all turn our phone off, put it in the middle of the table. And actually pay attention, old school style.
I think it's, you know, being conscious, being aware. You know, it's like, you know, when I'm on the farm, I basically don't, my phone stays in the car because I'm just, some of the times I'm out, you know, doing fencing, I'm cutting up, you know, an old tree that's fallen down for fence posts, or I'm doing things and a phone just doesn't, you know, it's, I can't hear it or I just can't carry it. So, you know, I might, I'll go with them out the mobile phone for 6-8 hours sometimes, or, which sometimes frustrates Mandy J. But, you know, I think it's, you know, I have concerns with, you know, as humans we're evolving and, you know, technology is great in a lot of ways. And also, I have concerns of health issues with technology and the way that it's drawing, especially the young people, into this black hole, this screen, you know, where they are switched off from nature. You know, as a kid, I didn't get a TV. We didn't have a television until I was 10. You know, the man walked on the moon, supposedly. And and computers didn't exist, mobile phones. We had, the old phone. And so I grew up in a different world. And I'm glad I did because, you know, I rode horses through the bush. I grew up, you know, on the farm. We rode horses and chased kangaroos and did all those things, you know. Because that's what you did. There wasn't anything else really. And now there is so many distractions. There's so many things to as we're talking about, not to give to yourself because there's, you know, the screen is God basically in a lot of times. And it is a concern. And I think health-wise, you know, people are carrying it on their bodies and electromagnetic energy and, you know, different cancers and things like that. But, you know, it's also, as humans, we have to find our way forward. We have to also go, okay, well, let's talk to the cells of this body and let's say, okay, cells, these electromagnetic energy, these equipment are going to be more and more. How can we, at a cellular level, can the cells adjust And can we, rather than be in fear, it's a part of our lives, can we then say to the cells of our body, like biology of belief, Bruce Lipton, talking to and creating our own reality, is that, okay, how can we actually flip this and use this to actually help our ascension? So rather than still be aware and not bombard our bodies, but then say to the cells of our bodies, let's tune in, let's find a way so we can evolve and grow with what's happening on the planet. Because I was just sent an email about a week or so ago, and I must forward it to you, that they reckon they're going to put another 140,000 satellites in the, I don't know, that figure's probably not right, I'm not sure, 40,000, I think, more satellites up in the air to bombard the planet with the 5G.
Wow.
That's coming down. So basically they want to bombard the whole planet, you know, nature, humans, everything, just saturated. This is what
5G is available everywhere.
Yeah, and it's a bit like a sci-fi movie. Mm. And also what I was sent as well was that they was now saying that they're going to put microchips into people when they vaccinate them, so that people, their bank balance and all that is going to be just, they just right. have to, you know, swipe their hand over. But then with all this technology, that they will be able to monitor everybody who has a chip in them. Obviously, they'll know exactly what everybody's doing and what they're up to. So it's something like out of a sci-fi movie, and it's like, no way you're going to get one of those chips into me. That's, you know, I'll just go bush.
I know. It's a reoccurring conversation. People are talking about it a lot. And we've got people like Elon Musk talking about Neuralink, of like he's working on this technology to... So right now the phone is... seemingly separate to us, but yeah. not that separate. It's pretty connected to most people.
Yeah.
And that ability to find out anything in a moment, in a heartbeat almost, look up almost endless information. He's trying to work out a way to speed up the process. So it's pretty much just like thinking. It's like a new lobe of the brain.
Wow.
And kind of like the chip. But I don't know specifics, but I do keep hearing people talk about it in detail, and I've heard him talk about it in detail as well. To me, it seems like I don't think I would do it either. I do not.
Where are we going? You know,
where are we going?
Where are we going?
And then, I do remember even decades ago.
Realities, you know.
Yeah, of the kind of contemplations of beyond 2000. Like, remember in the 80s and so forth, the shows about sci-fi kind of predictions of life beyond the 2000s, and we're here, 2020 is coming right up.
Yeah.
And there were predictions and perceptions about the future of us becoming robots, essentially. And it's kind of like part of that is kind of like as people get more and more sucked into their phone and all these talks about the chip and the neural link, it looks like that could actually be a potential. So it seems like this movement of people like yourself, like that are staying connected to the earth and rewilding, and you can just feel it. Your prana is strong. Your life force is strong. It seems like possibly, I mean, it's already happening once again, this kind of polarity of people being drawn to that, like, get me in nature. Get me in nature. I need my feet on the earth.
Yeah.
And also people being more and more drawn into virtual reality and just more and more technology. People can't get enough. We got the cutting-edge phone, and then we just want the next best
especially
thing.
Especially for a lot of young people, they're addicted. Yeah. It's an addiction, you know, and that's a serious thing. You know, there's alcohol and there's drugs and all those and cigarettes and, you know, technology is an addiction. And, you know, as humans, we are evolving, and to me, it's that balance. We've got to honour the earth and the wisdom of the earth and the wisdom of nature and the wisdom of the indigenous tribes and the indigenous people that have that connection. They have that connection to spirit and to earth. That's where they get their messages from. That they don't need to go onto Google or do anything. They tune in. The ones that are really like the shamans or the, if you go out to a tribe into Amazon, this reality that we're in that doesn't exist. They're fully connected into the jungle, and they know all the, you know, the bird calls, and you know, it's that's their web, their infinite, their internet. You know, so you could say so. It's a really interesting time we're in, you know, where technology and quantum physics, and that is just expanding and expanding. And where is it going and what is it doing? And are, you know, to me, it's like a lot of this technology from UFOs and from, you know, galactic technology has been around and suppressed since the 50s or 60s. They've had this, but governments have held on to it and let out little bits and that. So I think a lot of the technology that, you know, when you look at what humans are doing, and we haven't really utilized solar power or wind power, and we're still, you know, the things we're doing with coal and petroleum and all these things, we could be doing so much better on the planet that we're not. Why? Because I think there's the matrix is actually there to actually capture the masses and keep people held in this space because it's control. And so, they want the powers that be want to keep the matrix as the matrix, and they want to get people more involved and more clued into these technology things.
Because who do you think they is?
They.
Who's they?
Well, you know, there's, who knows? Yeah. But, you know, there's lots of theories. You can go, and I haven't been a big theorist, but I've heard over the years, I've sort of, you know, I've heard different things. There is the Illuminati. Yeah. There's the, you know, the elite, the bankers, the whoever, you know.
That want to keep the power.
Yeah, you know, as I think there's a lot going on there which we're not told and we're not aware of. So for me, really, my path is to follow my own wisdom and to tune into what my guidance is, and not get sucked into. That's probably why I'm not in social media, because I want to stay clear and clean to the earth. That's what I'm here to do. My medicine is to connect deep to the earth and then hold space for other people to come and connect into the earth. And then, and in that, they can then connect into their own wisdom within them, because we all have the wisdom within us, and we're here, and our soul and our higher self knows our path and what we're here for. But a lot of times we're distracted. And so it's finding that balance where we still need to live in this matrix, in this, well, 3D, but we're, you know, the ones that are, we're moving into 4 and 5D realities, because our energy is raising up. And that's, you know, to keep our energies and our frequency high, we've really just got to be aware of the food we put into our bodies, having a practice, you know, chanting, a yoga, Agnihotra, something that day is a daily practice that keeps our energy. It's personal hygiene, not just taking a shower or brushing our teeth. Now, if we want to raise our vibration, it's actually about tuning into our energetic bodies and then nurturing and honoring those in those different ways.
What do you say to people that feel they don't have time, they don't have time to do all those self-care rituals and so forth to keep their vibration high? They're running after the kids, they got to do this, that, and the other, which I am doing. I'm kind of playing devil's advocate, because I often talk about that, and then people say, yeah, that's well and good, but I don't have time to do all that. What's your kind of answer to that?
As I said before, you're the only one who can really give to yourself, and it's just taking the next step. Maybe I'm going to get up at half an hour early, and I'm just going to do 10 minutes of meditation. I'm going to go for a walk in the, you know, when the sun comes up, or I'm, you know, instead of watching that movie or whatever it is, or spending, you know, I'm going to get to bed a little bit earlier. I'm just making small adjustments, just, you know.
Instead of scrolling the phone.
Yeah, instead of scrolling the phone, or just, you know, making those little adjustments and actually just saying, you know, I'm going to make some changes, and I'm just going to trial it for a month, and I see how I feel. How am I now? Keep a journal. How do I feel in my body? And then after a month, wow, do I feel more energy? Do I feel more expanded? Do I feel healthier? Do I feel more alert? And so exploring, you know, because this physical body now is the only vehicle we have at this time. And so, and it's the most amazing technology on this planet is this. This spirit in this physical body is the most amazing technology there is. You know, I believe as we go down the path that we'll be able to actually levitate and bilocate. I believe that in other lifetimes we used to do that in Atlantis, or, you know, in Lemuria and those other lifetimes, that was a part of our natural ability to do that. And I think the more we dust off the old, you know, patterns and programs and the old beliefs, that this is a physical body that is actually fluid. It is atoms, it is energy, it is vibration. So it's a bit like the movie The Matrix where, you know, he actually starts to realize that he can do those things. It's just letting go of those beliefs that everything is concrete and you can't. And when you actually start to shift and to, you know, expand the mind and allow yourself, it's, we're so programmed from such a young age that this is life and it's this way. And once we start to tune in and allow ourselves to maybe it's not set in concrete, maybe we can do this thing. You know, these kids that are, you know, coming in these days that can, you know, shift coins from one cup to another, that can levitate, that can actually mind read. You know, there's psychic people all, you know, you've been to them, I've been to them, that can tell you certain things about you that you go, well, how do they know that? You know, there's people that can do these things. So we are so much more than just this physical body. Mm-hmm. You know, we are an amazing computer, an amazing, you know, being that we're only really just starting to tap into. And that's spending more time with ourselves, mm-hmm. actually giving to ourselves. And then what is your, you have a, you're a unique, there's only one Stuart Watkins in the world and you're a unique individual. The gifts that you have are actually unique to you. And then, you know, to actually, the deeper you delve into that and find those, then the more you can actually offer that to people and say, hey, look, you know, try this or try that, or this is what I've experienced, you know. And you know, Ram Dass is one of your main guys, he's been a big inspiration for you. And you know, there's those gurus and those ones that have come before that actually have said, this is possible.
Have you read Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda?
I've read bits of it.
Yeah.
I haven't read the whole book.
It's a good, great book to read before going to places like Rishikesh.
Oh, right.
And tune into the mystery of what yogis were doing not too long ago and now that we think is totally miraculous and unhuman. And it's I love it. I've read it several times. It's great before going to Rishikesh.
I'll have to next trip, I'll read it again.
Yeah. And The Yoga of Jesus. That's another great one, especially if you go into a cave that apparently he was at.
Well, yeah. Interesting. We a good friend of ours, Helen McCarthy. Hi, Helen. When we went to Rishikesh before, she said, oh, there's a great book, Jesus Lived in India. And we went, right, we'll check it out. Anyway, we spent the first night in Delhi and we were wandering around the shopping centres, and I came to this bookstore then having a look, and Mandy came up next to me and went, there it is. We found it on the first day. Jesus Lived in India. And in this book, well-researched book, was saying that Jesus actually, when he was a teenager, went and spent time in India as a part of his training to actually, as a healer, as you know, from with the sadhus and spent time there. And then supposedly, this is one of the theories, that he could slow his heartbeat right down and just basically appeared to have died, not have died, and maybe did, maybe didn't. But they're saying once he resurrected, he actually went and spent time in India and meditated in some caves there, and then actually is buried in Kashmir. And so apparently, according to in this book, Moses' grave is in Kashmir as well. And that's seems to be a lot of the conflict between India and Pakistan is around Kashmir. And it seemed to be as the Garden of Eden, or it has a very spiritual significance. So we read this book when we were over there, and that's when we asked one of the guides in India, and we asked him about the cave that Jesus had spent time in, and he went, oh, there was this one that the tourists go to, but he said, I know another one. There's a Babaji up there, and we went up and met the Babaji who'd spent, I don't know, 20-odd years. He'd meditated in the cave for about 6 years straight, and he'd spent 20 years building a little shrine there, and he lives there in this little so he allowed us to go in, and we sat up in this cave that supposedly Jesus meditated in, and we sat, Mandy and I sat up there and meditated with these bats flying around. It was so beautiful, and like, who knows, you know, yeah, very possibly this cave is ancient, as old as the earth, so who knows who's been there before. So, yeah, you know, there's been amazing ones who have walked this path before, and showing the way. And I think it's becoming more and more accessible for us these days, but it's also becoming more as it's coming harder because there's so many distractions. You know,
yeah, so many distractions, and it's like almost a blessing and a curse that all of these teachings are so available. Mm. I think it's easy to take it for granted and become a little bit complacent and not kind of like the analogy of someone looking for water under the earth, trying to dig for a well, and they dig a little bit and stop because they're not finding any water. So they dig another hole next to it, trying to find water, can't find any, stop. End up digging a whole bunch of holes but not finding any water instead of just digging one deep hole and finding the water, mining for the riches. And I think a lot of us do that with all of these very powerful methodologies available and workshops every weekend, countless things to choose from. It's great, but it can easily be misused. And I think often when people are just getting to the water, to the riches, it brings up shit and they get restless, they get irritated, they get triggered. Oh, time to go dig another hole, find water over there. And then just as they're really getting to the good stuff, they divert once again. I think that's pretty common. So I think in today's day and age where often one doesn't have a core teacher to really keep one accountable.
Mm.
Takes a lot of like journaling and real
dedication,
self-will, checking in and staying honest with oneself because it's so easy to deceive ourselves and distract.
Yeah. You know, I know that if I don't do my Agnihotra, this is me personally, and I don't do my yoga for a couple of days, I feel it energetically. I feel the difference. I feel it physically and I feel it energetically. And I know that I'm just, and so I don't feel as centered and I don't feel as vital. And so I go back to it because I know what it gives me. It centers me. It actually nourishes me, expands me, and it clears. It's like a reset. You know, the yoga and the Agnihotra is, okay, what's been happening? What's I've been processing? Movement, you know, you're shifting it and you're releasing it. And then the next day you can then deal with the next day. But what happens is people put a layer of one day on, they don't do anything. And then the next they put a layer of another day and then a layer of another day. And all of a sudden they get overwhelmed because they've got so much stuff that they're, you know, to me it's personal hygiene, like brushing your teeth every day or having a shower. It's is keeping that energetics clean by doing these practices. And I just finished reading Krishnadasa's book. You know, he was a great mate of Ram Dass. Got a picture up there. And he was saying his thing, you know, and it's a practice. And it's called a practice for a reason because it's a practice. And he said, is mantra. And I know it's one of your favorite ones as well. And I love to, you know, dabble in mantra. I'm not all that great at it, but I love, you know, the Shruti and just to do the mantra. And it brings you to the heart and it creates an energetic vibration, you know, where the more you, you know, announcing Siddha Ram or Hare Krishna or it holds a certain energy and a vibration and it shifts and it's a practice that actually said, don't get too caught up in, you know, it's good to get it right, but the best thing is to do it, just sing, just, you know, just drop yourself into that space and just do it. It's the doing of it. And the more you do it, then the more you'll actually get it right and the more you'll actually be. But it's the doing, you know, it's one thing to, we can think a lot about walking our path and doing that. It's actually the doing of it is, that's what we're here at this time, you know, 2020, it's actually the doing. It's the walking of the path. The doing of it is what we're being asked to do as humans, you know, to step up and step forward and to actually be rather than just to, you know, to talk or to, you know, to surmise or it's actually to, this is, you know, this aspect of who we are.
Yeah.
This is, you know, what we're here to move forward into and create new ways of being.
Totally. You were talking about holding space before and your teepee and your place is one of the ultimate places for holding space for a lot of people. I mean, you've held space for a lot of incredible work and ceremonies and how have you witnessed from when you began allowing people to be on your land and make drums and have ceremony, how have you witnessed the evolution of that? Where do you feel the community is at in terms of opening of the hearts and community and connection, and what are your observations?
It's changed and it hasn't. Mm-hmm. It's changed where the fact that people are stepping up more and more as far as, you know, wanting to be present, and it hasn't changed because people are still needing that space to actually come together. You know, it's community is called community because it's common unity. It's actually that, you know, what a lot of people are feeling very alone on their journeys. You know, even though they might have a family and stuff, they still feel, and it's, you know, your journey is an individual journey, and it's also a collective journey. And it's important, you know, the tribal aspect is important. It's what's lost a lot in our society is that coming together and sharing and nurturing with each other. And, you know, the joy of sitting in circle, and one of the most powerful aspects of sitting in circle once we've drummed and journeyed and done a lot of shamanic journey is the sharing at the end where the talking stick gets passed around. And I've seen people grab the talking stick for the first time and go, oh my God, what do I do? And, you know, I'm so self-conscious. And after about three or four times they go, oh wow, because it's a safe space. It's not about judging anybody or feeling you're being judged. It's actually a safe space. You don't have to say anything if you don't want to. It's about sharing where you're at and being vulnerable and feeling safe in that, and then hearing other people sharing the same thing and feeling vulnerable and going, oh wow, I'm going through that as well, or I understand that. Oh, thanks for that insight. Yeah, I really, you've given me another perspective on it. Because, you know, there's a saying that the truth is a crystal of many facets. So you can have a crystal and it has many facets of the truth in it, which is the truth, but it'll actually, you know, some people will see one thing and somebody will see something else, and we will experience things from John's point of view or from Stuart's point of view. And then when someone else gives us another perspective or shares something, we go, oh, wow, thanks. I probably never would have seen that or never would have experienced. I can't experience everything, but I can experience through that person and what they've shared and go, oh, yeah, okay, thank you for doing that. And when people share and come together, it's such a healing. They don't feel alone. You know, just even on the weekend, I had a full moon drumming, and one beautiful lady shared that she was feeling really struggling to be here on the planet, and just, you know, through her processes and that, and she's saying, just come to the circle, has just flicked the switch for me. I actually feel, you know, like, yes, wow. I'm ready just to move forward again. Mm. Coming, sitting with the drum, singing, watching the sunset, just being present with yourself and being present with like-minded nourishes and gives people that. So it's something.
It comes back to what we're talking about of everyone wants to be heard, be listened to.
Yeah, and when we come together, we have the opportunity to share, and then we hold space for the others. So we get the opportunity to be heard, and then we hear. You know, we have a one sharing for ourselves, and then we might hear 30 people. We hold space, the art of listening, not commenting, not judging, just actually being present, holding space and really listening and going, wow. And being in appreciation and gratitude for that person's journey, that perspective, you know, because, you know, full moon drummings, I've had people that have lost, you know, brothers and sisters or people, and they've, you know, they've cried and they've shared songs for the first time or a poem they've written or, you know. A very powerful part for me was before I actually started to hold circle, there was dear friends of mine, how I actually got back in the early days. There wasn't many, you know, when I was in my late 20s, there wasn't many hippies around. There was the odd shop. There was a place called the Crescent Moon in Midland, and they used to sell, you know, the incense. I'd go in there and go, oh, okay. And then I bought a magazine, the Conscious Living magazine, and Susie and Russ Davies, anyway, they had a teepee. And Russ actually passed a while afterwards. And Susie said, we're going to have an all-night gathering for us, and we come and do Agnihotra at sunset, and we hold a drum beat all night. There was about four of us that were holding a drum beat and all night. And it's the first time I'd been a part or witnessed the talking stick, because she had a 6 meter teepee, which was, it's not a big teepee, and people came throughout the night. And Russ was laid out in the middle of the teepee, dressed up in, he was riding American Indian stuff, so he was dressed out. And this talking stick went around, not all night, but it would sort of go around for a couple of hours and then stop, and then, you know, midnight or something like that, it would come out again. And people would share, he was laying there, they would speak to him whilst he was there, what he meant to them, you know, how much they loved him, the stories, different stories. They were crying. There was, you know, an outpouring of grief, of love, and this man was in the teepee, and that's my first experience of a talking stick.
Wow.
And I was like blown away. I was like, wow, that was
me away.
So,
wow.
You know, I've got
hairs on me, tingles too.
And I was just such a powerful experience that I thought, I want to gift this or offer this to other people, you know, to come and experience this, to have the opportunity to sit in sacred space and to share and to gift. And you don't have to share. You can just grab the talking stick and say, oh, namaste, or whatever it is, and pass it on. So there's no, thing that you have to actually say anything. It's just a matter of being present and giving to yourself and giving to the other people that, you know, want to do that as well. So
that even brings me to the art of listening and applying that to someone who's dying, a loved one that's dying, rather than needing to do something or say something, which, of course, if we can do something, of course, do it. Try to make them comfortable or try to. But those situations where they're just about to die and there's actually nothing to do, there's nothing to say. And really, it's the art of being able just to hold space, just to listen, just to be there with them. And that's been another big part of Ram Dass's work, really helping people die consciously.
Yeah.
Training people to also be able to hold space for someone to die. And I think it's a huge teaching for us where we put like grief and death, these parts of aspects of life we tend to collectively, especially in the West, get very uncomfortable around, training ourselves to be able to be with ourselves, which then we're more able to be with others during these big moments in life that can be very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable. So those trainings in conversation, like you were sharing, those uncomfortable, gritty moments where we're confronted in relationship, that's another like precious yoga moment of training to kind of penetrate those sticking points in our consciousness, in our energy fields, and become more prepared even for our own death, which we fear so much in our culture. Like it kind of comes full circle into it's all preparation to be as present for whatever comes our way, whether a loved one that we don't want him to die, like holy crap, you just don't want him to die, or more able to just be with that predicament and breathe through the stickiness of it and let it go. And I mean, all of this can be applied to anything, that art of listening, really paying attention to what's actually happening rather than what we would rather was happening, which is the common conundrum. We're so preoccupied with what we think ought to be happening rather than just being with what is
just
and really
being present.
Paying attention.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah. Loving acceptance is a big one, you know, and it is a practice.
Yeah.
You know, and we have plenty of opportunity to do that. And a lot of times we duck and weave and we want to, create something else out of it. Mm-hmm. I have my mum and dad are still with me. I haven't been through that process where, you know, a lot of people have. And so they're amazing. Dad's 89 And then in March next year, they're still on the farm, still driving tractors, chasing sheep.
Amazing.
And so we've sort of talked about, you know, what do you want to do with the farm? And we had a conversation a couple of years ago and they said, well, we're still happy doing this. And so we've, my brother and sister and I have just supported them and we go and help them, you know, on the farm. And it's got to the point this, the end of this year, where they said, we, you know, can't keep doing this. And we've said, right. So we're having a family gathering. Yeah, Dad said, you know, I've got some of my favourite dogs out the back there. He said, just dig a hole and push me in and that'll do me, you know. And so it's, I think, you know, death is a really interesting one. As I say, I've killed a lot of animals in my time. I used to trap rabbits when I was a kid. You know, it's something that I would go and trap rabbits and bring them back and skin them, and Mum would make rabbit stew soup out of them because she lived off the land and you know, feed it to the dogs. And so, and I've had to shoot a couple of my really good horses that were, and some dogs, you know, that Mum and Dad's sheep dogs. And it's not the same as a human, but it's also recognizing the fact that, yeah, death is a part of life, and life can be brutal, especially, you know, on this earth, on this planet. And so it's really being present to what is, and what is in that moment, not so much what we want, but what is it that that person, really listening to that person, what are their needs and what do they want, and how can I best be of service, being of service. And, you know, and there's different ways. You know, Mandy is one of the great things that Mandy does. She does, she's a death doula and does, you know, takes videos for people that are passing on, or their, you know, their parents are passing on, and really on them. So there's, you know, there's people that are specialised in that and are very apt at doing that. So, yeah, death is one of those, you know, it's the greatest fear as humans that we have, death, you know. And you and I have been in certain circles that there is a death process where you have to actually let go of the ego and let go of our identity, because that's a part of, you know, a part of our journey, and what we're here to do is to actually see the big picture and go beyond this physical body, and we do that in different ways. So, yeah, it's a journey. It's an exploration. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here to expand our consciousness and become more consciously aware, and finding ways to do that, or following our guidance, what is right for us. You know, there's so many young people out there that are taking different drugs and things like that, or that are getting, you know, and searching and doing things, but they're actually opening themselves up to other entities and other beings that are getting lost, you know. So it's
I'm glad you brought that up, actually. I'm glad you brought that up, because I heard another masterful teacher, Rod Stryker, bring that up as well. The blessing and the curse of this kind of mainstreaming, like more accessibility of all these very potent, expansive plant medicines, but also drugs. And the kind of blessing is there, opening us up and helping us wake up to who we truly are. But one of the potential flip sides of that is, yeah, if we're not discerning enough or grounded or being truly skillful in the practice of it. Yeah. Speak more about that, please, of the potential of entities entering and
yeah, you know, as it's, you know, the shamans that have been in the jungle for, you know, they're trained from childhood. They're, you know, and they are able to transverse or go into other dimensions, other realms to connect with spirit. And I remember a very good friend of yours and mine who once said that the shamans know that this is all an illusion. And in that illusion, you have to be very precise on what you're doing. Not all the time, but if you're doing ceremony, then you have to, even though it's an illusion, you have to, because there are other entities and energies that will come in and play and feed off you, especially if there's fear or there's lower vibration, because that's what they feed off, and that's where they want to keep people, is, you know, to feed off. So the more we raise our vibration, the more we actually bypass and transmute these lower energies. They just basically love us, the highest vibration. So the more we're in that state, then they basically can't feed off. So in ceremonies and things like that, where a space is held by a shaman or somebody who's trained to do that, then they are very aware of what's happening physically and also energetically They are very aware of the space, and they like to hold a bubble or a sphere of energy where people are held, and they will be very in tune to that because that is what, you know, they're trained to do, and they're aware of these different realms and different dimensions. Whereas if people are taking, and it's also just with alcohol, it's even marijuana, it's, you know, all these other, especially, you know, ice and all these other ones that are opening people up energetically. And if they're not sitting in space or not being helped or anything like that, they can open themselves up to entities and other beings that will actually attach themselves and create more fear. And they will stay with them for years and years and sometimes life for their lifetime unless they actually move through that and shift it where people are going, I don't feel myself, or I feel really grumpy, or I feel continually, you know, I've got a headache or what, all these other symptoms. Sometimes they've actually... because their certain substances will open up their energetic system, their chakras and that, which will then allow, you know, other beings to come in and to create fear. They'll live in that fear space where when running a sweat lodge, you basically are opening yourself up, you know, you hold a space for people to sit in that sweat lodge, and you set a circle with the directions and with the energies, and you're calling those beings to help you, the beings of light and high dimensional beings. And so you open yourself right up, you know, fully open and to experience and to let go and to, you know. And then when you energetically close off the circle, I love patting that
speaker.
Yeah,
you do, don't you? Giving it some good taps.
Must be that bit of Italian in me, which I haven't got. Is that you close the circle and then energetically and physically you go and jump into a dam or you wash with cold water. So you're actually closing your system mm-hmm. down. So when you go back out and converse with normal people or everyday people in the matrix, you're actually back. Mm-hmm. Your system is back to its normal space where it will self-regulate and be, you know, filtering different things. But when you open yourself up and you don't take those precautions, but you don't take those guidances or you don't actually set those things, then you can be opening yourself up to really anything. Sometimes, yes, amazing insights and amazing things. And then you can just have a moment where you suddenly drop into fear, and then that fear will be what is that lower vibration is what will then, you know, or somebody might be having an entity which then will decide that it wants to swap and jump into somebody else who's, you know, in of a similar vibration. So there's a whole myriad of things that can happen that I've, you know, sort of experienced in one way, you know, different ways. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I do Agnihotra, where people come up all the time to form in drummings to different circles and things. The Agnihotra is a purifying cleansing. It just does a reset. It's one of the most beautiful, powerful ways for clearing. The indigenous people will use different Palo Santo or smudge sticks or sage or eucalyptus. The indigenous people of Australia will use eucalyptus. Or I heard an Aboriginal elder say that one of the best ways for shifting really heavy old energy is wormwood. Hence the name wormwood. It's good for shifting parasites or parasitical energy. So a lot of the indigenous cultures know all these, you know, ceremonies and ways to do this. It's, you know, when as us in the matrix trying to open ourselves up to explore and find things, sometimes we actually are creating worst case scenarios by not actually doing it, you know, taking the shortcut, not, you know, say digging that well. And if we're actually doing it the right way or actually following the path we're meant to, rather than go, oh, just go and, you know, catch up with so-and-so and we'll just do this and, oh, yeah, it'll be fine, it'll be great. You know, we've all done that and we learn from experiences that sometimes is not, you know, the way to go.
And what are your thoughts? I'm seeing it all around the world, a lot of younger, which it doesn't necessarily mean it's an issue, but younger psychonauts that have been exploring the psychedelic realms and different chemicals and plant medicines, and then all of a sudden they're in the role of shaman after maybe commonly a couple years, you know, of having some great experiences, and then all of a sudden they're facilitating. Do you see any issues with that, or have you even witnessed much of that going on? Or?
Yeah, I've to me, I wouldn't, you know, partake in anything that is, unless it's a shaman who's actually really been trained or really knows what they're doing. And I have known of situations where people have started to, you know, to do things and the consequences are that they've had health issues or they've had their ass kicked in some way, because when you start to work in those plant medicines or those other ones, that you're actually opening yourself up to those higher dimensions and up to deep journeys, then you really have to be in full integrity and fully know what you're doing, because the deeper you go, the more you actually need to be present. And it's all good when the sailing's fine, when you're sailing the ship and it's all good, but when the rough seas are happening, you actually need a captain at the helm who actually knows how to sail the ship and knows what to do in those times when, you know, you need to. And so, as again, you can actually, you know, sit in with so-called shamans and end up with situations that aren't pleasant, you know. And in that, there's lessons. You know, whatever we do in life, there is lessons. Yeah. There's gifting. You know, it's whatever experience we have, we can point the finger and do this, and we can be the victim, but basically we're being the victim. And if we actually say, well, I chose that. It's my responsibility. If I actually take responsibility for my action, I chose to go down that path, and maybe I didn't know. And the learning and the lesson is this. So there's a gift in everything. There's gold, as Mandy would say, glean the gold. Whatever is happening to you in life, there is a lesson, there is a learning there, you know, and to actually take that on board and then let the rest go. Okay, that was an experience I don't really wish to, and the gift was this. I learned something. I have an understanding now, and I know next time I'll do it this way or I'll do that. Therefore, that nugget, that gift was worth it. Because, but if you don't see that and you just become a victim, you're just going to keep going around in a circle rather than spiraling upwards. You know, we have a choice to just keep going around and around circles, or we have a choice to move and to spiral. And that's to become aware of what I'm a creator of my reality. I co-create with other people around me. So what have I created here? What's this? What's going on here? Let's not point fingers. Let's just look at why, what is going on, you know, and what's the lesson, what's the learning. And from that lesson, from that acknowledgement we talked about before, what's my path forward? What is my path forward? What is the way forward from here? And that's that tuning in. I'm not going to Google it. I'm actually going to connect into my wisdom, and I'm going to ask Spirit, what's my path forward from this point? What you know, how can I best serve me, and how can I best serve humanity?
Yeah. Yeah. It's already been an hour and a half, my man.
Whoa. God, we can talk while somebody can talk.
Flow's coming up.
Yay.
Less than a month.
I just think I just flowed some of it. You just filled up the cup without me knowing. I think it just flowed some of it down my
apologies.
Shirt. No, that's all right.
It's getting trippy in here. Yeah, John's spilling tea. And
Flow,
yeah, John, you're going to be a major highlight once again, doing your Agnihotra and, of course, holding space and having your amazing TP there. It's going to be beautiful. And Mandy and Kate facilitating cacao ceremony, which is going to be great.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful offering for them to do that and to flow on from the Agnihotra. And I really, you know, I was there on the first one, and I got up, you asked me to get up at the end of the first flow and say some words. And I went, you know, some people have a vision and it doesn't happen. And some people have a vision and carry it through and actually make it happen. And that's what you and Amanda did with the flow. And it was such a beautiful, you know, I encourage, well, all the things we're talking about is to connect to the earth, to connect to yourself, connect to community. You know, that is such a beautiful space to do it. The watering hole, the whole energy, what you provide and what you set up is such a beautiful space. I really admire and commend you or honour you for, you know, what you do and what you gift for people to come and connect into themselves, into the land, and to, you know, to community. It's such a beautiful weekend, and they're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, it's a magical weekend.
Well, let's wrap it up. Is there anything else you want to let the listeners know about? Your book, your new website coming up, any upcoming drum circles, retreats, anything like that?
Well, as I said before, Mandy and I have a retreat to Rishikesh in March. Yeah. So, get on to the new website.
Yeah.
I've got to get on there myself.
What's the URL?
It's www.johnwife.com.
With a H Wife.
W-H-I-F-E, yes. Yes. I've seen all the different spellings over the years. So, yeah, well, that's in Rishikesh. We're off again in March. It's sort of like a two-year. We're doing two a year, one in March and one in sort of October. It seems about the best time of the year to do that. And it's an amazing journey. Yeah, have drum courses coming up in the 2020 and the probably February, continual full moon drummings. Mandy and I have cacao ceremonies. Well, Julie and I were looking at, and Mandy and I were looking at doing something this Sunday for the summer solstice, but I'm not sure if we're still umming and ahhing around that one. But there's always something going on. Yeah. So, yeah, I just really want to honour you for the inspiration that you are
to many
people. And the path that you've chosen to walk, because it's, you know, to walk a path that is to honour yourself and is not a normal path takes courage and it takes a certain dedication, and especially with a family. So I really want to acknowledge you and, yeah, the beautiful people that, you know, surround me and support me in what I do, especially Mandy J and all the others that are too numerous to mention. So, yeah.
Yeah. Just,
feel very blessed for the opportunities I've had and the amazing people I've met over the years, you know, and the amazing experiences I've had.
Mm.
And there's so many things I probably would change, and you know, I probably wouldn't change any of it.
Well, you're an amazing man, such an inspiration, and really great to get you on the show and really sit and go deep and chat about life. So I'm really grateful for you being here. Such an honor.
It's been a pleasure. Yeah. I've loved it.
Love you, John.
Gratitude.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. If you did enjoy that, please take a moment to leave a 5-star review and a comment on Apple Podcasts. While you're there, please subscribe, share the love on your platforms. That support is really deeply appreciated. If you feel like further supporting the podcast, please hop on to stuartwatkins.org/podcast, and there are donate buttons there if you feel inspired to support in that way. To all of you that have been donating and supporting in that way, thank you. Endless gratitude to you. Thank you so much. I bow to you. You're really helping keep the production of this podcast going. I am going to take a little break from the podcast over Flow Times New Year and Flow. I'm going to take a couple weeks off it just to focus on Flow, which does require a lot of my energy, so I can be a good facilitator of the Flow community and also remain to be a good parent and a good husband and all that, and just balance all of my various roles. So I'm going to take a break from the podcast for a couple weeks, but I'm super excited to return later in 2020 with some awesome guests. And yeah, please feel free to reach out if you've got any suggestions of guests that you think I should get on the show, any topics that you'd like me to focus on. Reach out via my website, stuartwatkins.org, my email, info@stuartwatkins.org, or try to hit me up on Instagram or Facebook. I'm not always great with responding on Facebook and Instagram. I'm better via email, but I'm very available. Reach out and connect. Much love to you. Have a beautiful festive season. Happy holidays and happy new year and all that good stuff. Love, love, love. And we'll connect soon.